We are going to move on. And Mihai, you are back on stage with the execution issues. We're best to tell. Long title, short talk.
Short talk. Well, yeah. What do I press? This is, in a way, to answer Dr. Pfeffer, because I think we've been talking about this last year and the year before. I like to distinguish between two types of heart failure. Both chronic is the outpatient and patient who requires a hospitalization. If you look at outpatients, we made a major progress to the point that if you do a trial, it may be very difficult to beat placebo. In contrast, if you look at patients hospitalized for heart failure, not only they have an unacceptably high post-discharge event rate that can reach 50% within 60 to 90 days, but this event rate had not substantially changed in the last 15 years. Not only that, but to the best of my knowledge, in the last 10 years, there has not been a single conclusive trial of benefit. We raised lots of hypotheses. I think RELAX, it's a move in the right direction. It's very positive because it's hope. But I think it's raising hypotheses that will need to be tested by another trial. Now, we talk about other entities like ACS. But if you compare the ACS mortality and the and you use a 0 to 100 scale, pales compared to what you see with the event rate in a patient hospitalized for heart failure. I don't think in the future society it's going to pay for a new expensive drug that is reducing mortality from 1% to 0.5%, and you need 15,000 patients to show that benefit. Now, we classified those trials in A, B, and C, stage A, stage B, and stage C, and to date, most of the trials were stage A and B, and that, with all due respect, had something to do also with regulatory agencies, because we're focusing in this acute stage, and for some time, and Rosano proved my point, that this was not recognized as an entity. And even as we speak, HHF is not recognized as a clear entity. Now, lots of trials were done, close to, I think, $9 billion in the last 15 years. If you put together VMAC and Uptime and Everest and Veritas and Revive and Survive and Protect and Ascend and now RELAX, and the results have not been great, in spite of good basic research and good hypothesis. Now, there are many components for a successful trial, like knowing the drug, matching the drug with the right patients, conducting, like Aldo pointed out, stage C trials, and alignment between academia and industry and regulatory agencies. But what I think I discovered, to my surprise this year, based on a meeting that was hosted at the FDA, and everybody was around the table, the industry, the academia, the NIH, and this was a very honest meeting, was not a sponsored meeting, and we all agree, if you read this, those minutes, because they are just minutes, that we do have a problem. And the problem is related to globalization of those trials and the site selection. Who are those sites? In addition to not knowing the drug, in addition of not matching the drug with the right patients, do we have a problem with site selection? And I think we do. And, you know, there are two problems. One is related, and this is old news, to geographical differences. And if you look at the Everest trial, and if you divide patients in four regions, in effect, you're dealing like with four different planets. The background therapy
was different. The outcome was different. There were different patients. There were different patients, and therefore, the outcomes were different. It was not that Eastern Europe had a lower mortality compared to U.S., because when you adjusted for that, the mortality, it was the same. So it's related to the type of patient enrolled, and let's say in Eastern Europe compared to Western Europe, compared to North America and South America. But this, in my opinion, it's the biggest problem. This is the benchmark for a CRO, an ARO, to do well. 0.4 patients per month. Now, we're talking about institutions that have between 5 and 10 admissions per day. And when you think that 0.4 should be the benchmark, who are those patients? If an institution is only one patient every 3 months, and that's considered to be the benchmark, I think we do have a problem. This paper is coming out, and what we did, this is a retrospective, we looked at site enrollment and outcome. First of all, keep in mind that in Everest, 200 sites did not enroll a single patient. And the remaining had one or two patients, and very few had many patients. Now, this is the pattern that we've seen in Everest. And what you see there, that most patients enrolled came not from U.S., not from Western Europe, but from Eastern Europe and South America. And that has been a pattern that we've seen, if you look at RELAXED, and Marco can correct me if I'm wrong, but in many trials, where are the patients coming from? Are those the patients that we see every day? And this is interesting, and I can't see without our glasses, and that's a problem. But look at number of patients per site. Look at mortality and hospitalizations. A huge difference. And I can't see from here. I'm sure you cannot see it. But anyway, it's a huge difference from 35%. Michael, can you
we
see
what... We have 33 for those who recruited between 1 and 10, 26, 11 to 30, and 20 more than 30. And basically, the more you recruit, the lower is the mortality.
Also, when you look at loss for follow-up, there's a huge difference in loss for follow-up between number of patients per site and patients that were lost for follow-up. So what are the issues with low enrolling sites? First of all, the motivation is not there, and maybe that's related to reimbursement, lack of recognition within the institution, because, at least in the United States, because of RVUs, it's more important than enrolling 50 patients. Do you have protected time to enroll patients? The workload had increased, so investigators spread thin between clinical loads. The issue of clinical investigator, I think in a way it's not there. And the monetary incentives. On one hand, in Eastern Europe, because of the way things are going, it's a huge incentive to enroll a patient. In the United States, it's a liability. Not only you're not making money, but you're losing money. However, importantly, we're not reimbursed from the most important aspect in enrolling the right patient. It's time and energy to screen. So it's una tantum when you enroll a patient. But it's not a systematic approach to look at all admissions and among all admissions to select the right patients. And often, with all due respect, if you talk with the monitors and the groups conducting those studies, I was told recently, why should I know about heart failure? I'm just a monitor. And they are key in conducting those studies. There are many other issues. Many sites with few or no patients will not justify the cost of training and the site maintenance. poor enrollers are potentially less likely to follow the protocol. We've seen this in Everest, are less likely to have an infrastructure to conduct the study. Often they have many competing studies, may have a pre-select bias sample, and may have, as we've seen with Everest, may have higher dropout rates and poor follow-up quality. And also, too many sites create costly logistical and trial management issues for companies trying to conduct those studies. Now, what are the possible solutions? And what you see in this slide is, before we had our meeting, we had an email conversation, and some of the statements there are from those emails that circulated among the participants. Develop site selection from for those patients. Experts in heart failure to standardize and publish the site selection criteria that can be used by industry, CRO, and ARO. Develop a database, but importantly, develop a pre-trial registry. And some companies, I think, will follow this example. Why a pre-trial registry? Because you get to know the site. It's a good investment. It is a good investment. Know how many patients have that problem. You can learn about variables within the study population. You can see the clinical course within that institution. And you know the people that you're going to work with. Not only the PI. The PI is not only a person. Is the chief of cardiology, are the nurses, the pharmacy. Look at our oncology friends. They are doing things very differently. So I'm going to take this, my last slide. It's not my slide, and this comes from Professor Cleland. And I do agree with him that this might be the solution. Investigators need support, and some often they don't have that support within the institution, outside the institution. Regulators focus too much on industry, don't recognize the huge extra burden placed on investigators. Research is becoming too complex and too bureaucratic, and that patients often don't want to be involved, in contrast with oncology patients. Sites have little interest in recruiting 5 or 10 patients. It's a losing proposition because it's not economically viable. And he suggests, and I do agree with him, let's identify the right site, and in a global trial, that site should try to enroll 30 to 40 patients. His suggestion is to all move to Denmark because in Denmark they can conduct a large trial with 2,000 patients, John?
30 hospitals can supply you 7,000 patients within about 18 months to 2 years, of which you can randomize 2,500, and you get a very good registry of everybody you didn't randomize, which adds external validity to the trial. I agree. If we want to do research properly, we should just all invest our money in Denmark and get them to do the studies for us.
And that's my closing remark from Dr. Cleland. Thank you.
Thank you. We don't need to go to a vacation for Denmark, just doing studies. Comment?
Mihai, this is a really important paper. I'm glad that you and Javed have summarized this to put into the literature, because I think there's not a whole lot of work that's been done in this area. One of the, there's so many issues that you bring up here, but I think the opportunity to form organizations, trial organizations that have continuous work is extremely important. Much of what happens with sites is that, like, they're subcontractors for building houses, and that is when the project's over, you have to shut down everything. And so what we've tried to do with the Ducks organization, our former fellows, which is about 300 former fellows, is keep them continuously supplied with clinical trials. You know, it's not perfect, but it's a step in the right direction.
I agree, Chris. You need to have a network coming from academic centers and have this network, as you said, being alive for years and years and years, because stopping trials in a center can kill the center forever. And I like very much the paper of Mihai showing that really, if we are still in the learning curve, there is no way you can add anything to a trial. Aldo?
Just a comment regarding the registries. I fully agree with the concept of the registry before starting the trial, even if I have to say that this kind of approach is easier in chronic condition or, for example, in the prevention of cardiovascular diseases. I have a good example. Now it is called bolus recruitment because you put in the trial a lot of patients in a brief period of time. We are conducting in this period the REVEAL trial, testing a new drug raising the level of HDL. We'll see the results, but it's not the issue, the kind of trial. In this case, we did a pre-registration in all participating centers, and we send a study coordinator in each of these centers, and we were able to randomize 23,000 patients in less than 1 year. And also in Italy, with 30 centers, we randomize up to now, in 6 months, more than 1,200 patients. In a chronic condition, if you organize this kind of registries, is very useful. In acute heart failure, I think this is quite difficult, because you said, in several centers, there are a lot of patients admitted for acute heart failure, and then the recruitment is 0.4 per month for several reasons. If you do a registry, you see that you have everything, the feasibility to do it, and also the patient, but then the results are not so good. So I think it is more difficult, it is more an issue to have networks of very good centers just engaged in one trial, and then when the trial is finished, in another one. Competition is another issue.
Yeah, and then academic research organizations are going probably to play a major role. If you can introduce yourself, sir, another question.
I'm one of the guys from Denmark that have done trials that are very efficient.
Are you including the placebo arm or the active arm?
I'm in the active arm, definitely. I have been working with this subject for many years, and I think it's quite complex what makes trials very difficult. But I think if I should give a very simple recipe. First of all, you should, when you do the protocol, have some practical people involved, not only regulators, sponsors, and key opinion leaders, because they will overlook practical issues and take decisions based on theoretical considerations that may, in practice, be very difficult to live with. So if you do a protocol and try to make it simple, then you go to experienced investigators and say, I have worked hard to make this simple. Is it simple? Have I used all the opportunities? Could you guide me? Based on their input, you correct the protocol, so now you have the final protocol. And then you say to these experienced investigators, could you guide me? How should we collect patients for this trial? How will we screen and do everything? So when you go out to the site, you have a protocol, you have a plan for each site, and you have the background of their plan. Why do you think this is doable? Then you should approach more sites than you need to use and say to them, we are going to see which are the best sites, and we are looking at 15, we only need 7. So you need to persuade me that I should accept you for my study. And then when you say the sponsor is, of course, interested in rapid recruitment, then they also find out that it's not only a question of the honorarium per patient, but also much a question of in how many times will you get the honorarium. And if that is a good thing, I call it a good bargain, you should come with a trial that is more well-prepared than all the others. Then you will get attention. And an issue that is very, very important is that, I don't know how to express this in English, but this is a very difficult business because sponsors say, we are going to start a trial. And trialists say, we are going to contribute with patients. But there's a lot of uncertainty about if that's ever going to happen. So come also with something that is predictable so that if they say, we are really going to support this trial, then they don't risk that after a month everything is stopped and they are completely out of income for the site. So it's about you should prepare the trial as if you were going to conduct it yourself. It should be easy and well paid and predictable. Then it will function.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Could we have a microphone here, please? Yeah, it's coming.
Thank you. I agree with Aldo that the site issue in overall in acute heart failure is a major issue regarding the sites, because at least in Europe, if we see the registries, heart failure is treated by internist most of the time, nor most of the time in many, many sites, overall in the center. So you have two choices. One, to pick up a real population and train the internist to conduct trials, or another one, to go, like the United States, to very specific heart failure clinics, and then the gap in between the real population and the trial population increases. So I think that in this condition, you have this problem, because to pick up the correct site, you have to really work hard, depending on the Europe sites.
Thank you. Mihai, maybe final question. Did you remove the centers with a low recruitment rate in Everest, and was the result still true, or you didn't go so far?
Absolutely. It's centers that did not enroll, they're not part of this analysis.
No, when you remove the centers with a very low recruitment rate,
did
the results still come positive?
Yeah.
Then it didn't change the results.
This is retrospective, so you have to, it's just a hypothesis. This is not, this is a nice illustration, but,
It's important to know.
But that's a very good point. When we looked at the highest enrollers in the ESCAPE study, which is a randomized trial of the PAC catheter, the results look like there was a positive finding in that course experience in using a PAC catheter.
That's very important.